Ballot Measure 1 supporters say the initiative is aimed at protecting fish and wildlife habitat. You may have seen a sign supporting Stand for Salmon in a neighbor's yard advocating a yes vote. You may also see a Stand for Alaska sign urging a no vote in another neighbor's yard. So what do you do? Vote yes or no? Stand for Salmon or Stand for Alaska? Most people likely want to do both, and confusion about what Ballot Measure 1 means has a lot of Alaskans wondering how to vote. Both sides are here to answer questions today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Both supporters and opponents of Ballot Measure 1 say bad things will happen if their side loses. As with many complex issues, there's a lot of heat on both sides. So today we're seeking light and clarity to help Alaskans better understand what a yes or no vote will mean. My guests today are Carly Weir. Carly is the executive director for Cook Inlet Keeper. Hi, Carly.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And also Kara Moriarty. Kara is the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, or AOGA, one of the extraction industry groups that is opposed to the ballot measure and is advocating for a no vote. Hello, Kara.
Good morning, Lori. Good morning, Carly.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for being here. And Alaskans, you can also join the conversation. What questions do you have about Ballot Measure 1? Are you worried about protecting habitat, but also worried about protecting Alaska jobs? You can give us a call statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So I was going to flip a coin to see who starts here, but I forgot to bring a coin in the studio. So I guess what I'd like to do is, Carly, since you're supporting this initiative, tell us from your perspective what this ballot measure does and what it does not do.
Yes. I work with Cook Inlet Keeper. We're a nonprofit that's been here since 1995, and a lot of our work centers on clean water and healthy salmon habitat issues. So over the years, we've learned that our system that regulates fish habitat permitting is broken. It was created over 60 years ago, and Alaska has changed a lot since then. The scale and nature of how we're developing in this wonderful salmon landscape that we all enjoy, it's also changing. And so we need to update our state law now so that we don't have to spend $5.5 billion like they do in the state of Washington to recover salmon habitat, because what we have right now is, by and large, a healthy, intact ecosystem for salmon.
All right. And Kara, from your perspective, what do you think Ballot Measure 1 does and doesn't do?
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate the invitation. And as you mentioned, I'm here on behalf of a large coalition for Stand for Alaska, not just the oil and gas industry. We have a very broad coalition made up of Alaska Native leaders, labor unions, including the AFL-CIO, oil and gas companies, mining companies, small businesses, you know, tens of thousands of Alaskans. From our perspective, we don't see a broken system. The law is 60 years old, but that does not mean it's not working. The state of Alaska put out a frequently asked questions document recently, and in it, Fish and Game was asked, does Alaska Department of Fish and Game have concerns that the current permitting system does not adequately protect salmon? And their answer was no, and I'm reading here, the ADF&G, Department of Fish and Game, believes the current permitting process effectively protects anadromous fish habitat. So from our perspective, what the initiative does in attempt to further to protect salmon, it actually creates a very complex new permitting system that will impact every single project in fish along freshwater, and the initiative also says wildlife habitat. So for us, we just think there's a lot of unintended consequences that will impact every project in the state. And we all love salmon. I mean, I've got to fish all over the state and down in Cook Inlet and had my kids on the Kenai. So we all want to have fish, and we all want to have strong protections. And I think we have that in place today. And what this does is creates a whole new permitting system that will be very detrimental to Alaska.
Well, we'll drill down on some of those potential unintended consequences that you talked about. I'd like to remind our listeners that this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about Ballot Measure 1. In the studio with me are Carly Weir. Carly is Executive Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, and also Kara Moriarty. Kara is the President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, and we're talking about both sides of this Ballot Measure 1. Carly, I've heard a few different times about the law being 6 years old. What was behind the effort here with this ballot measure? What do you think is lacking in current state or federal law that supporters felt that this was needed?
Yeah, well, frankly, since the law that we have right now is one sentence long, it requires the commissioner of Department of Fish and Game to issue a permit if he deems that that project will properly protect fish and game. But unfortunately, there is no scientific definition of what that means. So because of that, the law can be interpreted in many different ways depending on who is in office. And that's unfortunate because salmon know no political bounds. And I think there are a number of examples. Just recently, Department of Fish and Game issued 13 fish habitat permits for the Donlin Mine. Some of those last, you know, until the mine closes, and some of them remove salmon spawning streams. And so without any public notice for those Title 16 permits, the communities that are affected by the proposed mine have no opportunity to weigh in.
Are there other laws in other places that this was modeled on, or how was it that it came together?
Yeah, well, this actually, the process that led us to this ballot initiative started in the fall of 2016 when fishermen, commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, subsistence fish users petitioned the Board of Fish to update this law. They're the ones that said that there is a problem with the law. The Board of Fish did pass a resolution that asked the state legislature to look at this, to update the law. In March of 2017, Representative Louise Stutes introduced House Bill 199. This was an attempt to update this law, to put some basic scientific parameters around what proper protection of fish and game actually means. Some of this is water flow. Some of this is buffers. The other thing this law does, which we believe creates some efficiency, is it automatically presumes anadromy, that there are fish in our streams, and it puts the burden of proof on corporations and developers to prove that there is fish, to prove there is not fish in a stream, rather than the other way around. I actually first learned about the Title 16 process with the proposed Chewitna coal mine on the west side of Cook Inlet. And that's where I learned that there is no public notice for Title 16 permits. There is no opportunity for the community over in Beluga or Tyonek to learn if and when Fish and Game were to issue permits that would have removed 14 miles of salmon spawning streams over in Middle Creek on the west side of Cook Inlet.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about Ballot Measure 1. And Kara, I want to give you a chance to respond. And also, I would put a question out for you, and I would ask this of both of you. But Kara, go ahead. A lot of Alaskans might be seeing this initiative as salmon versus industry. How do you respond to that? Do you disagree? Do you agree? And if so, why or why not?
Well, before I answer that question, you know, just to comment on the public input piece, you know, the fish habitat permit that we have to get for a lot of major projects, such as the Chewitna coal mine or the Donlin mine or an oil and gas project, or frankly, the Department of Transportation actually holds the most fish habitat permits in Alaska. Over 60% of them that are issued by Fish and Game are actually issued to DOT. So in addition to the fish habitat permit, for us, we have to comply with 18 state and federal laws where there are opportunities for public comment. So I don't represent the mining industry, but I assume, and because I've seen the news reports from public hearings being held on the Donlin mine or the Chewitna mine. I also, you know, want to point out on House Bill 199 and the Board of Fish letter, the Board of Fish was recommending some updates and some public input. They were not recommending this 8-page initiative, to my knowledge. The Board of Fish has not endorsed the initiative as written. So to answer your question about how do I feel about this being salmon versus industry, and I think it's just an unfortunate characteristic. The reality is not only will it be on the burden for industry to prove that there are no anadromous fish, which includes a lot more than just salmon. It includes over 20 species of fish in the state of Alaska. It will also impact state agencies as well as individual Alaskans. So we're not the only ones as industry that are impacted. In this frequently asked questions document, DOT has even said, how much effort would be required for a site-specific determination to determine that it's not anadromous. And they said, in cases without an obvious barrier, proving anadromous fish are not present would be difficult, time-consuming, and expensive. So that's for individual Alaskans, state agencies, as well as industry. So again, one of those unintended consequences when you really get into the heart and the meat of the initiative that provides that huge impact.
Carly, salmon versus industry.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely a false choice. I think that what we do know we need in Alaska is responsible development. We do need development of our resources, and we need those developments to be respectful and helpful for maintaining salmon habitat for future generations. You can do both. Certainly, there are ways to build roads that are supportive of keeping intact salmon habitat, and there are a lot of ways we have learned, for example, in the Mat-Su or the Lower 48, where building roads without proper culverts, for example, is really detrimental to long-term salmon populations. So we can have both. We can do responsible development in salmon landscapes, and I think at this point, we should all recognize that Alaskans want that. We know that that is possible, and we know that we need to support not only jobs in the oil and gas industry, but also the 30,000 jobs that come from our commercial salmon industry.
All right, if you're just joining us, we're talking about ballot measure one, and I know I have a lot of questions, and if you have some questions about what a yes or no vote means on this initiative, you can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So the sentence at the top of the act says, an act providing for protection of wild salmon and fish and wildlife habitat. Talk a little bit about the wildlife habitat part of this. What's the intention there, and what does that mean?
Well, I think we all recognize that Alaska is a special place for a lot of reasons. Certainly, we have a lot of mineral and oil wealth, but we also have abundant wildlife, fish habitat, and clean water. The writers of the Alaska Constitution, our founders, believed that they actually wrote, wherever occurring in a natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. This means that as Alaskans, we are all owners of our fish and wildlife resources. We have a right to them. Because the Title 16 law that regulates fish and game permitting in salmon habitat is one sentence long and so vague, this ballot measure really is an attempt, and I think a very good and clear one written in legal language, to provide basic parameters on what proper protection of fish and game means.
When I think of wildlife, I think of terrestrial animals. So,
well, this law really regulates development in and around anadromous fish habitat. This is intended to make sure that our salmon populations stay a vital part of our economy and our culture and our way of life. It is very much focused on fish habitat. So as you read the language of the ballot measure, you'll see that it talks about anadromous fish habitat. It talks about water flows. It talks about buffers. It talks around how we develop in those salmon landscapes.
Kara, would you like to comment about the idea of it being encompassing also the term wildlife?
Well, I think that it's a really good catch, Lori, that a lot of people haven't paid attention to. The wildlife habitat is included throughout the initiative. And I think that from our perspective, it is not a clear document. There is a lot of ambiguity. There is a lot of undefined terms in the 8-page initiative. And, you know, even the departments have said, you know, when you ask the Department of Environmental Conservation or DOT or Fish and Game or Natural Resources, when you look at the document that the state agencies have put out, they have said in several places it's unclear, it's unknown, it's undetermined what, you know, how all of this could be interpreted. So, you know, from our perspective, we appreciate the fact that the proponents say they want to have responsible resource development and that this isn't supposed to be about fish over anything else. But two provisions of the initiative were struck down as unconstitutional because it would have put fish above everything else. And existing projects are not grandfathered. So if you look at the last page of the initiative, it says that projects do not apply to existing activities, operations, or facilities until the expiration or termination of the user's permit, authorization, license, or approval. Where some fish habitat permits are approved for the life of the project, not all of them are. So for the case of Alyeska Pipeline and TAPS, their 700 fish habitat permits come up for renewal on a rotating basis every 3 to 5 years. So in 2019, over 70 to 80 fish habitat permits for TAPS would come up for renewal. And that is why Alyeska has said they don't know, and this is the quote from Tom Barrett, that if the Fish Habitat Initiative were to become law, it would be all but impossible for TAPS to renew several projects and authorizations that are crucial to its continued function, and the operational viability of TAPS would be placed at risk. So again, it just goes back to that very complex, a lot more red tape, and a lot of unintended consequences that may or may not have been the intention, but are certainly the result of the initiative in front of us today.
Well, I want to go to the phones in just a moment, but please, Carly, go ahead and respond to this idea of unintended consequences and permit renewals for...
Absolutely. Well, first, there is a lot that Fish and Game and the legislature will do when this becomes law. If this passes on November 6th, there is an entire process where Fish and Game and the state legislature will have the opportunity to define some of these terms. There is a lot of discretion left to Fish and Game to determine how this law will be implemented and what some phrases mean. And that is intentional so that they are the experts, that they have the opportunity to do that. The grandfather clause that was written in there was specifically for projects who have these permits. Most fish habitat permits are issued for a very long time. A lot of them are issued for 99 years. The Donlin permits that were just issued are issued for the duration of the project. And a lot of there is opportunity for Fish and Game, for example, to issue general permits that would perhaps apply to numerous small fish habitat permits that have to be renewed on projects like that. This law is really geared towards, this ballot measure is really geared towards holding large corporations accountable for developing in our salmon landscape. So for the everyday Alaskan, this really has very little effect on their day-to-day life. This is so that we can hold large corporations and mines accountable for their development in salmon country.
And Lori, just to respond to that, though, but the problem is, the law would be that they're not grandfathered because they're not grandfathered because you fall under this new program when your fish habitat comes up for renewal. So I'm not lying when I say Alyeska has 70 to 80 fish habitat permits that come up for renewal every single year that would fall under this program. DOT has said that this would change the way DOT constructs roads and airports, including bridges, culverts, roadway embankment protection, stream realignment, as well as habitat mitigation, restoration, or enhancement. So again, it's very clear from the agencies that their work would be much different for everyday Alaskans as well as industrial projects.
I'd like to go to the phones, and we'll talk more about this two-tier process, especially because I think that gets at some of what this current discussion revolves around, and I have a couple other examples that I'd like to put in front of you both. But let's go to the phones for a moment. Robert is in Anchorage. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question for Stand for Alaska. Given our current declines in the fish returns already, how can we say that a vote for Stand for Salmon is against the Alaskan economy when our salmon are such an important cornerstone of not only the economy, but as well as subsistence fish users and, the entire YK Delta just depends on salmon. And, I just don't. I guess my question is, how can you so unequivocally say that a vote for Stand for Salmon, a vote for yes, is against the economy?
Well, Robert, thank you for that question. And we all concerned about salmon returns. Again, I love to fish with my family, and the oil and gas industry has coexisted with commercial and sport fishing in Cook Inlet very well for the last 60 years. But the reality is Ballot Measure 1 does not fix the problems in the ocean. And according to the Department of Fish and Game, and again, I'm reading a quote from a biologist from June of 2018, and the quote says, "Most of the data suggests that the problem is in the marine environment. Freshwater systems are healthy, producing plenty of smolt and fry going out. It's just that something is going on in the ocean that we can't control." And so, unfortunately, Ballot Measure 1 doesn't impact anything that's happening in the ocean. And if we want to have a conversation about how to address salmon returns, then that should be happening in the public process, unlike this initiative that was put together without any public input on some of these unintended consequences that we see throughout the initiative. It just doesn't address that problem.
All right.
Could I respond?
Thank you, Robert, for the question. And Carly, please go ahead and respond.
Yeah. I mean, of course, our oceans are changing. And of course, there is a lot of complexity in how salmon are interacting in our ocean environments. But one thing we do know very clearly is that to sustain salmon for the long run, we need healthy habitat where they return to spawn year after year. We've seen all over the rest of the world what happens when we don't protect onshore habitat where salmon spawn. They're gone. Alaska has salmon. This is actually the last stand for wild salmon on the planet here in Alaska. Yes.
All right. Thank you for that follow-up. Before we have to take a quick break here in just a few moments, let's take another call. Maliki, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, is in Juneau. Hello.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to call in and say that one of the biggest advantages that I would see for Sanford Salmon would just be the public awareness that would be drawn to the attention of the actual ongoing the project throughout the state. A perfect example is here in Southeast Alaska, where the University of Alaska is getting ready to clear cut about 14,000 acres right around Haines, which by Fish and Game's admission is the second biggest cove producer in Southeast Alaska. And there's very little public knowledge of that. So that would be one benefit that Fish and Game is not able to currently inform the public, as private land like that is not held accountable to any Fish and Game requirements. So I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
Thanks, Malachi. And sorry for mispronouncing your name earlier, but the idea of public notice for large projects is what he was getting at with this timber project.
Yeah, well, this ballot measure updates the law so that for all projects, there's simple public notice, which just means it's posted online and you can see it. For major permits, which are these larger tier, this larger class of developments, there's the opportunity for 30 days public notice. This is a really critical shift in the law. Right now, there is no transparency. Certainly for some projects, whether they're mines or oil and gas, you have other federal permits, you have other public notices about different things, but you do not have public notice about harm or potential harm in salmon landscape.
And I think if this was just Kara. About, if this initiative was just about public notice, I think we'd be having a different conversation. This 8-page initiative creates a lot of regulatory red tape that will prevent some projects from being permitted, whether it's a private project, public project, or industrial development.
All right. I would like to just get one email question in before we take a break. This is from Rebecca Logan, who is the CEO of Alaska Support Industry Alliance, and she says, do the supporters of the ballot initiative believe that it provides for criminal penalties to be in place for private citizens who are developing land? If so, do they believe that's right?
Well, I would have to read the exact language of the law right in front of me, but there are new mechanisms within this ballot measure to hold developers accountable if they create harm in their development projects. I would have to read the exact language, which I don't want to do right now.
All right. All right. Any comment quickly, Kara, before we take a break?
Well, on page 7 of the initiative, section 10, it does say a person who violates, so I would assume that means an individual, I'm not an attorney, but a person, not just a corporation, who violates the permitting system that's in here, or a permit condition or stipulation, is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor and is punishable under criminal negligence. So it does look like it's a criminal offense if you violate the permit.
Well, this is very common. I see that in section 11 right now. This is a very common mechanism in all laws, because if there are no penalties, there is very little reason for them to be enforced. This is geared towards large developers. I would be hard-pressed to find a situation where an individual would be so negligent as to require this stipulation.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take more questions, calls, emails about ballot measure 1 as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Strongheart's Native Helpline, offering peer-to-peer support and resources for Native Americans affected by domestic violence. Safe, confidential, and toll-free, 1-844-7-NATIVE. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are going to go back to the phones for just a bit to get through some of the calls that we've had stacked up here. Let's go to Kathleen, who is in Soldotna. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I was wondering, I was talking to somebody about this issue, about Stand for Salmon, and I understand that this person insured me that this ballot measure is completely funded, not completely funded, but funded by outside interest groups. And I also have another comment, if you could answer that and then take my other comment.
Go ahead, Carly.
Okay. Yep. That is false. I think the outside interests that are funding this are the multinational corporations like BP, ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, Donlin Gold and Pebble Mine.
But you mean are funding the vote?
Are funding the vote? No. Yes, those are the outside interests. This initiative is funded. The top three contributors right now are the Alaska Center, the Alaska Conservation Foundation, and Cook Inlet Keeper. These are all Alaska-based organizations who have thousands of Alaskan donors who contribute to this and other efforts. One marker I'm really proud of is that there are over 1,000 small donors to this initiative. This really is a grassroots campaign. It's a homegrown initiative created by and for Alaskans. Yeah, I think that's a scary prospect to hear outside interests, but the real outside interests are the foreign corporations that are now dumping $11 million to confuse Alaskans on what this vote really means.
Kara, would you like to follow up there?
Yeah, I would. I do think that if you look at, some of the funding for the Yes side, it is coming from some, they may not be the top three funders, but they're funders such as the Moore Foundation in Oregon and some very rich individuals from Boston and Florida, which is their right. I'm not saying that's not what they should, that they don't have a right to do that. But for our side, we are being funded by corporations that create thousands of Alaskan jobs that have paid billions of dollars in state revenue. Some of these companies, like ConocoPhillips and BP, have been in Alaska for 40 to 50 years. The money comes out of their Alaska-based budgets. So I think that some of those corporations are about as Alaskan as you can get.
All right, let's stick with the phones for a moment, and we're going to go to Les Guerra, who is in Anchorage. Representative Guerra, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've got a question for each panelist. I'll try to make it quick. There are two separate questions. The Stand for Alaska folks, one of the things this initiative will do will be to help protect us from the Pebble Mine. And the answer is, well, you should go to the legislature to do something about the Pebble Mine, but anything in the legislature gets blocked on Pebble. So I'll leave you with a question, which is, how can you ask them to go do this in the legislature where measures like this get blocked? For the Stand for Salmon folks, separate question. Bradley Lake is likely to be expanded. It's a responsible hydropower project. Would the initiative have any impact on the renewal and expansion of a project, and even if it has minor impact on anadromous fish rather than any major impact? So those are the two questions.
All right. Thanks for those questions. Kara, the first question was to you about going to the legislature for action.
Representative Guerra, thanks for calling in. We don't have a position on the Pebble Mine. So if this was intended to block the Pebble Mine, then it should have been written to do that versus a way that impacts private citizens, industrial development. The initiative does not allow for offsite mitigation, for example. So the Department of Transportation has said that they work with agencies on the best site for mitigation based on scientific knowledge and comprehensive review of the resources. This initiative changes that, and on-site mitigation for airports may no longer be an option, as this can lead to other concerns as it may cause wildlife hazards. So, they utilize off-site mitigation to attract birds elsewhere. That's why fish habitat is created off-site. When you're constructing airports. So to get back to your question, Representative Guerra, if this is a way to stop Pebble Mine, then it should have been written to do that versus all of these unintended consequences. And the way we read the initiative, and we have heard from some hydro projects, I don't know about Bradley Lake specifically, but I do know down in Kodiak and down in Southeast, those hydro projects have said this initiative would impact their ability to get permit renewals.
Let's talk about Bradley Lake.
Sure. Carly. I'm not 100% certain about all the specifics and which Title 16 permits they do or do not have, but my understanding is that there is proper fish passage, that this would likely fall under the minor category, and so this would be a relatively simple process for Bradley Lake. I think the reason this is in front of voters right now is because the legislature had 2 years to act. There were more public comments on House Bill 199 last year than there were on the entire budget. Alaskans were asking for a voice. This was a very clear and transparent process. And unfortunately, because the legislature failed to act, we are working in the citizens' initiative process through ballot measure one right now.
All right, we have lots of calls on the line. Ingrid is in Fox Creek. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I live on top of Fox Creek Canyon. Fox Creek is a salmon stream. I'm located right across the bay from Bradley Lake, which was the biggest ecological disaster to hit the Kenai Peninsula. Number one, they dammed off salmon streams, destroyed thousands of acres of brown bear habitat. Then they left all the slash from the spruce trees they cut for a power line that runs on the other side of Bradley Lake all the way to Soldotna. They left that slash down to breed bark beetles, which destroyed hundreds of miles, at least the 81 miles of forest. And that's why you see all the standing dead. So don't tell me that it would just be fine for more Bradley Lake expansion. I do know that Fox Creek, I'm on the other side, and I know the way this Title 16 works. Fish and Game and DNR are in cahoots together. All somebody has to do if they want to take a bulldozer across a salmon stream is go to Fish and Game and get a permit. In the law, it says there's supposed to be mitigating measures that the party that wants to cross the stream will come up with. That part is never enforced. They've been running bulldozers across the Wilderness Salmon Stream, Fox Creek, with no permit.
So, Ingrid, are you, it sounds like you're going to vote yes on ballot measure one?
Pardon?
Are you a yes vote on ballot measure one?
Can I finish? Let the public decide. I'm telling you the effects of the current law now, which is zero. They just hand out these permits and let the party do anything they want. That's why ballot initiative one is trying to correct that problem. Fox Creek is being destroyed by people that get these bogus so-called protection permits from Fish and Game right now.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your comments and your call. Obviously, she had a lot of concern and passion in her voice for this issue. I wanted to talk a little bit about the changes that the Supreme Court made in August. They ruled that the initiative could go forward, be on the ballot, but they made some changes. Carly, talk a little bit about how the changes affected the ballot initiative.
Yeah, well, what the changes did was basically remove what I would say for the layman is a hard no on what could happen in a development project in anadromous fish habitat. We believed this was constitutional because there was still discretion to the Fish and Game Commissioner, but this clarified that. So all of this talk and fear that this is going to shut down projects is completely irrelevant now, because the Commissioner of Fish and Game still has complete discretion to determine how a project meets the criteria set out in the language in this ballot measure. So You know, I think the issue at hand was whether or not this put the preservation of salmon ahead of, or the development of salmon resources ahead of the development of other resources. The Supreme Court took out passages that would have potentially said no to some projects in development in salmon landscapes.
Kara, your thoughts about the changes that the Alaska Supreme Court made? They struck some language provisions about the commissioner of Department of Fish and Game's discretion on permits. Did that satisfy a concern in that regard?
I think, you know, as Carly stated, the two sentences that were removed did remove the hard no, you know, as Carly stated. It absolutely, and the Supreme Court decision is actually, it's 44 pages, but it's actually a fairly easy to read document. Again, I'm not an attorney, but it was a pretty easy to read document. But however, it wasn't unanimous. And there was one dissenting view with Judge Winfrey that he would have struck other provisions because he stated that other provisions, such as not allowing offsite mitigation, as I mentioned, which is a concern for DOT and airport construction, he says that not allowing offsite mitigation is the same level of appropriation that the majority of the Supreme Court found unconstitutional. He feels is unconstitutional as well, because again, some projects will not be permitted if you cannot allow offsite mitigation.
And let's describe what offsite mitigation is. That's if you're affecting wetlands or waterways in one area, you could mitigate or improve, make better a wetland or a waterway in an area that is not local to this project that's taking place, that it could be somewhere else.
Correct. And that's pretty common in DOT projects, for example. I mean, I think that's why DOT has pointed out, the impact road construction and airport construction would have. You know, the initiative also gives the commissioner a lot of latitude. In other ways, the initiative also says the commissioner shall find, despite the application of scientifically proven, peer-reviewed, and accepted mitigation measures are allowed, the commissioner can still find the activity to cause substantial damage or significant impact and can deny a permit. So there's that's why we say it removes that scientific standard, because he or she could go above and beyond that and still deem a permit or deny a permit.
Would you like to follow up quickly and then we'll go back to the phones?
Sure. I mean, the law that is written right now is one sentence, and there is no scientific definition of what proper protection of fish and game is. This adds very clear parameters that are specific guidelines for fish and game to follow in how we are managing salmon habitat into the future. So this is putting in place very clear and new scientific standards for what protection of fish and game means in Alaska.
Let's go back to the phones. Kristen is in Anchor Point. Hi, Kristen. Do you have a question?
Well, no, not really. I just wanted to say that, first of all, I will be voting for this. But I would like to, first on it, I will be voting yes. And I wanted to say that this is an initiative. This means that it only runs as a law for 2 years. And in that 2 years, the legislature has the choice of changing it to fit what they think might be needed, to keep it the way it is, or just chuck it out altogether. So it's not like we're talking about something that will be set in stone there in Juneau. The other thing I wanted to say is, I've been in this state for over 40 years, and I, too, have seen what the extract industry and other industries can do to this state. And, yes, I think there's probably a need to put stronger checks on them, because the EPA is no longer functioning properly. And I do wonder about fish and game, because there's times they come up with concepts and ideas, and they claim they have the studies for it. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at the science, it's like, are you sure you want to go ahead and say these things? Because some of the stuff they say is doubtful. And they are part of the government whose primary duty right now is to make money. So,
well, thanks, Kristen, for the call and your comments. Let's get a little clarity on what happens when a ballot initiative passes. The legislature can't do anything for a period of 2 years, so they can't make any adjustments for the first 2 years. But some adjustments can be made. They can affect a ballot initiative after a two-year period. Kara, what are your thoughts about that?
That is correct, Lori. The Constitution says a ballot initiative the legislature cannot make any changes that makes any changes to the intent or direction of an initiative for 2 years. And so that's why it would, you know, even if somebody tried to in that 2 year period, it would just go into the courts. And again, that's something we haven't talked about, is the three levels of litigation and three opportunities to litigate that this initiative creates for anybody, even folks outside of Alaska. And so whether you're trying to make changes in the legislature in that 2 year window, which would ultimately be challenged one way or the other, or just the initiative itself.
And Carly, from your perspective, is that a concern? If this ballot measure were to pass, are you concerned about what might happen in 2 years?
Potentially, but I do believe that Alaskans have recognized, we saw a lot of warning signals this summer with closures of like the personal use fishery on the Kenai River, low returns all over the state. We saw warning signs that are hinting that our salmon landscape is not going to be here forever unless we do something to protect it. So I think Alaskans are ready to have a real and honest conversation about what responsible development looks like within salmon habitat. And I think they're willing to hold elected officials accountable to that belief.
We are going to take another quick break and we'll go back to more calls and questions on ballot measure one as Talk of Alaska continues.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you. Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare counselor, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
All right, we're coming back. We're back, and this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. In the studio is Carly Weir, Executive Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, who is a supporter of Ballot Measure 1, and Kara Moriarty is President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, who is advocating a vote no on Ballot Measure 1. We have a ton of calls stacked up and only a few minutes left, so let's take a few more of those. Vince is in Anchorage. Hi, Vince.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
Actually, a little more of a comment. I'm the president of the Alaska FL-CIO. We represent a little over 50,000 workers in the state of Alaska, and we passed a resolution or a convention in opposition to the ballot initiative. Anybody that knows me knows how much I care about salmon habitat, about fishing. I just spent a week in Bristol Bay. I was checking out every little fry that was swimming in the back channels, and while I was enjoying that opportunity. But even if you oppose Pebble Mine, it doesn't mean you have to support this ballot initiative. This one, in my opinion, is way far overreaching. It has very big impacts. It could kill jobs in the state. The members that I represent that build infrastructure around the state, it's a job killer there. Rural Alaska, I'm also on the Denali Commission. I've looked at a lot of the infrastructure projects that are really, really needed out in rural Alaska would be either eliminated or, you know, they won't get that type of infrastructure that they need. And it would create a huge budget deficit. I think it would add to our woes with a budget deficit because it would limit responsible oil and gas exploration, resource development, et cetera. So if this was set out to eliminate one single project, it was done poorly, and it should have been addressed that way, as Kara said. But in our mind, and we are all about, ask Kara, she could tell you this, holding mines and large corporations accountable. So I agree with Carly that that needs to be done. I just think this is the wrong vehicle to get it done, and it's going to have an adverse impact on our economy and kill jobs around the state.
Thank you for the call, Vince. And Carly, a lot of people have said exactly what he's saying, that this was aimed at the Pebble Mine. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's not true. This was not designed for the Pebble Mine. I think the writers of this and supporters like myself have recognized that the Pebble Mine presents a new and unprecedented threat to salmon habitat in a massive scale. I mean, we're talking about impacting the largest sockeye fishery in the world with the Pebble Mine. And because the law is so broken, and it depends on who is in office and how they interpret that one sentence, and there is no public notice for the residents of Bristol Bay or the citizens of Alaskans if a Title 16 permit were to be issued for, say, the Pebble Mine under the current law, we recognize that we desperately need an update now before it's too late. This law was very clearly written to hold those large projects accountable and to make sure that regular everyday development in rural Alaska proceeds unfettered as it is right now. We are supporters of responsible development, so those responsible projects that Vince mentioned should have no problem under this new law in continuing to develop as they are, if they are indeed responsible in salmon habitat.
Kara, quick follow-up, and then we'll go back to the phones.
Well, Vince, you know, thanks for calling in and talking about your organization's opposition. I think the fact of the matter is that it does impact all projects in the state, even projects that do it responsibly. And whether you're talking about existing infrastructure like TAPS or look at a project that's really important to Vince and his membership and all Alaskans, and that's the AKLNG project. The president and CEO of AGDC has said that it would be virtually impossible to permit the AKLNG project under this initiative. So the intent may have been to allow projects to move forward, but that's just not the reality in the application. And that's why these complex regulatory laws shouldn't go on the ballot. They should be debated in Juneau or in a regulatory regime that allows for the back and forth with agencies and biologists to prevent these unintended consequences.
How much for both of you will be left up to exactly that interpretation by the legislature to put these regulations in place? Do you think that it is clearly that the restrictions are clearly spelled out, that what the legislature will be mandated to do is clearly spelled out, or is there still a lot to be determined within that language interpretation wise when you read through it? I've read through it, and I'm not an attorney either, but I can see a lot of language in there that there could be a lot of back and forth about how to interpret it. So how much wiggle room do you think, Kara, quickly, that the legislature will have in how they create regulations?
Well, the challenge is because we've recognized that there's portions of this initiative that are very unclear, you can't make any significant changes for 2 years. So you have 2 years of unknown, which will ultimately probably be challenged regardless of how the legislature or the agencies try to write the regulation. But in other portions of the initiative, it is very clear. You cannot do offsite mitigation. DOT has said that will have an impact on airports. Frankly, it's that offsite mitigation piece that's probably the challenge for Alyeska and AKLNG and other road construction. So there's portions of this where it's very clear and then other portions where it's unclear. So again, just it's a mess.
Well, Carly, from your perspective, how clear is it?
Well, I think it is clear, and I think the real question is how much wiggle room does industry want to give on the current status quo of business as usual that they have right now? And I would argue that over the last few years, they did not want to come to the table. They did not want to have a conversation or engage in any conversation about what wiggle room really means. For example, offsite mitigation, there is still a lot of interpretation on what offsite means. A watershed is an enormous place. Most often, the way the Army Corps of Engineers has interpreted offsite mitigation is that it should be required within the same watershed. The Cook Inlet watershed, for example, is a massive place. And I think it's, you know, there are so many myths and falsehoods being spread. The Alaska LNG pipeline could certainly go forward under this initiative. It may require that they do certain things like directional drilling under salmon streams instead of trenching all the way through them. But that should be the cost of doing business if we are going to maintain our salmon habitat and our salmon populations, our salmon economy, and our salmon way of life for the next several generations.
We only have a couple minutes left. I'd like to go to the phones quickly, Kara.
Sure. I just want to say on House Bill 199, we did come to the table. That is not true. We reached out to Representative Stute's office numerous times. She could have moved that bill from her committee, and she chose not to. We offered to sit down with her numerous times to work on that piece of legislation.
Let's go to the phones. Kip is in Haines. Hi, Kip. Can you quickly give us a question?
Hi, Lori. It's not a question. I think Carly just hit it on the head there. She said, why not put the burden on industry? This is it for habitat and for salmon in the country and possibly in the world for wild stocks. Let's make that the priority. Let's not make the other industry, the burden on industry, the priority. Let's make salmon habitat the priority. Right here in Haines, we've recently had three incidents where Habitat Division has disregarded the comments and the suggestions by our local biologists to protect salmon habitat here for a highway project to allow dredging in one of the two most significant Chilkat drainages for Chinook salmon, which is now a species of concern. And it's just not working. So to suggest earlier that there was no problem with permitting via habitat with fish and game is totally inaccurate.
All right, let's. We only have a little bit of time left. Kara, how do you respond to this?
I would just say to Kip and Haines that the burden is on us today when you're talking about industrial development. We do comply with permits. Our fish habitat permits are not rubber stamped by the Department of Fish and Game. There is a lot of give and take and back and forth in what we have to do to make sure we are adequately protecting salmon. And the Department of Fish and Game has said that the current process does effectively protect anadromous fish habitat. And you've heard biologists say, if there are changes to be made, let's make those. But this initiative will create a lot of regulations that will kill jobs.
Thank you to my guests, Carly.
Yeah, well, I would just say that, you know, our current protections for wild salmon are outdated, vague, and really open to political influence. It's up to us now as Alaskans to be forward-thinking.
We're going to have to end it there. Thanks to my guests, Carly Weir, Executive Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, and Kara Moriarty, President and CEO of Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska was made possible by Strong Hearts Native Helpline, offering peer-to-peer support and resources for Native Americans affected by domestic violence. Safe, confidential, and toll-free, 1-844-7-NATIVE. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.